Thanks for having me here today. It's great to visit Hobart. I've spent the weekend here and we had beautiful weather. It was great to visit your markets and also visit the Mona Museum as well. It's a really fabulous building. I'm just going to start looking back to 2019. If I had to pick one word to summarise what happened in 2019, I would definitely have to say that word is uncertainty. As the year progressed, that uncertainty theme seemed to become more intense. Certainly you'll all remember all the back and forth between the US and China on that trade dispute. This uncertainty had a big impact on the economy. All economies around the world felt the effects of the uncertainty. It also had a big impact on financial markets as well. Looking ahead to 2020, I'm sure this word uncertainty is going to be a very useful word as well. So what have these worries been? There have been many concerns. Some have proved pretty persistent, like Brexit and the US-China trade tensions. Some others have been relatively short-lived. The chart shows some of the themes that we've all searched for on Google over 2019. They include the obvious topics like the trade war and Brexit, but in financial markets we've also worried about more exotic topics like negative yield curves and inverted yield curves and negative interest rates. In the end though, all these themes came together in an elevated concern around the risk of a global recession. The problem is that in uncertain times, businesses tend to defer their investment plans. Households tend to put off buying big ticket items like motor vehicles and other consumer durables. So you can see the relationship between these variables in the first chart. So we've showed global uncertainty in the red line. We flip that around, so as that red line's pointing down, it means uncertainty's been rising. And you can see there's been a strong relationship between that uncertainty measure and spending on things like consumer durables and businesses spending on machinery and equipment. Less demand for investment goods and less demand for consumer durables has meant less industrial production. So the right-hand side chart shows industrial production in the blue line, and that has dropped off as uncertainty has cut into spending. Because most of global trade is in business investment goods and consumer durables, we've seen global trade fall sharply as well. That's the green line in that second chart. So countries exposed to this story have suffered as a result, and this includes the Asian region in particular. And there is another outcome of this uncertainty that we need to think about as well. The same uncertainty that depressed spending has also lifted savings. So this excess of savings over investment means the supply of funds has exceeded the demand for funds. So the price of money or the interest rate has had to adjust lower. So interest rates have moved lower everywhere and they're set to remain low for a long time. This is actually helpful when we think of funding really long life projects, infrastructure for example. But there are also risks to this very low cost of money as well. So for financial markets, it's an environment where the focus will remain on the pursuit of yield and the pursuit of capital gain. So this can raise the risk of sort of bubble-like behaviour, and you'll probably all remember the Bitcoin episode not long ago. We all need to keep on close eye on financial markets in our businesses. It's worth being beware of the extremes and also being prepared for volatility. We've also seen households take on more risk too. And this CBA data in the chart shows an example of that adjustment. So we've seen the number of households holding equities has risen at a much faster pace than those holding bank deposits or property. So it looks like there's this real movement to invest in more riskier assets in order to pick up those returns. By the end of 2019, some of the uncertainty had receded. The US and China had reached a phase one trade deal and Brexit had happened. But as it turns out, nature abhors a vacuum. And in a very short space of time, we've been buffeted by a whole series of events, in particular bushfires, smoke, floods, and now a virus. So uncertainty is on the rise again. We're seeing lots of commentators putting forth quite negative scenarios around these events. I'd like to give CBA's contribution to this debate. So firstly, on the bushfires. So the bushfires mainly impacted on 5 different regional areas in New South Wales and Victoria. These regions account for around 3.5% of the economy, or about 4% of jobs. So a rough rule of thumb here is if we see a 10% drop off in activity in these regions, that will see economic activity cut by about 0.3 percentage points. So that is a reasonable amount, but it will be spread out over time, probably Q4 2019 and Q1 2020. But typically what you lose in that crisis period, you gain again in the rebuild period. So in terms of the bushfires, while they've had a very devastating impact on those communities, we think the overall impact on the economy will be pretty small. We'll see a hit to growth in the short term, but then we'll see some stronger activity as the rebuilding activity takes place. The structure of these regional economies will also help. So about a third of employment is in what you'd call public sector related areas, like health, public administration and education. So job losses aren't likely in these areas. More than 9% of employment's in the construction sector. This sector should benefit from the eventual rebuild. Job gains are possible in this sector. But sectors exposed to tourism in some fashion, like retail trade, accommodation and food, those types of services account for nearly 20% of jobs in these regions. So these are the sectors that are most exposed. And it's in this tourism consumer space where the fires are overlapping the threats from the coronavirus. So just on that coronavirus, so these types of geomedical events tend to impact on activity by a reduction in spending as uncertainty lifts, and also as people are sort of confined to particular areas or even just to their homes, and also through the disruption to global supply chains, and also through the impact on commodity prices. We typically see commodity prices move lower. SARS in 2013 is the only recent benchmark. So modelling by former RBA board member Warwick McKibben showed that the largest impacts of the SARS virus were on Hong Kong. We saw 2.6% subtraction from growth in Hong Kong in 2013. China, we saw a reduction of 1.1%, and Singapore was 0.5%. The impact on Australia was relatively small, with a subtraction from growth of only about 0.1%. But it's reasonable to expect a much bigger impact this time. So China is a much bigger player in the global economy. Back in 2003, they accounted for about 4% of global economic growth. Now it's about 18%. And China is now a lot more important to Australia's economy than it was back in 2013. We also have confidence issues at play, and they risk amplifying the negatives as well. So in a world of social media, those sort of confidence channels become stronger, and that can help perhaps even feed misinformation and help dampen consumer spending as well. So in terms of the tourism sector, we are already seeing a drop in foreign tourists coming to Australia. Obviously with a ban in place on Chinese tourists. So tourism makes up about 3% of the economy as a whole and about 5% of jobs, but these figures are higher for Tasmania, leaving this state potentially more exposed than Australia as a whole. One degree of protection comes from the fact that Australians spend more offshore on holidays than foreign tourists spend coming on holidays here. And what tends to happen in these types of events is that Australians tend to put off their overseas travel. So if we get a situation where Australians who would have normally been choosing to travel overseas decide to travel here in Australia instead, it could provide a really powerful offset to the loss of income from foreign tourists coming to Australia. So a helpful option at this point would be for Tasmania and perhaps all the states to really be promoting themselves as a tourist destination for domestic tourists. We think the bigger hit is likely to come through the education sector. So education is now our fourth largest export behind iron ore, coal and LNG. And it makes up around 40% of our services exports. And around one third of education export revenues comes from China. So in terms of education, New South Wales and Victoria are the most exposed, with a share of Chinese students noticeably larger than these states' share of the Australian economy. Tasmania is also a little more exposed than average, taking a slightly larger share of Chinese students than its share of the Australian economy. But this exposure is much smaller than for New South Wales and Victoria. So efforts to allow the study to take place online while the virus in play, while it won't offset the fact that we won't have the students here spending the money, it will perhaps at least keep these students enrolled and ensure that they do come back once the virus is under control. So this tourism and education story is largely going to play out in the consumer space. And the consumer has been the key domestic risk in the Australian economy for a number of years now. We've seen a real marked slowdown in consumer spending since around the middle of 2018. So the recent downturn in residential construction across the country, but particularly in New South Wales and Victoria, has been adding to those pressures in the consumer space. Now we've got the bushfires and the virus amplifying those downside risks. So we've had interest rate cuts. We had three cuts from the Reserve Bank last year. We've also had some tax cuts in the form of those personal income tax rebates that hit people's bank accounts last year when they completed their tax returns. They've been at play and they have to some extent helped the backdrop. We also think that we'll see the RBA cut the cash rate again two more times this year in April and August, taking the cash rate down to just 0.25%. So that will provide some support as well. It's worth having a look at how the consumer story is playing out at the moment though. So we can see that there are some very early impacts in some new data that CBA is now constructing and publishing on a monthly basis. So we've put together what we call the Household Spending Intentions Indicators, and basically it's combining our internal transaction data on household spending with Google Trends search data. So if you think about when you go and spend money these days, you often do a Google search about that item before you actually go and spend money. So for example, travel for instance, if you're planning to go on a holiday, before you actually go and spend any money, you're going to be doing a fair bit of Google searching about flights, accommodation, etc. So we're combining our internal spending data with this Google Trends data to form a little bit more of a forward-looking indicator of how the consumer is going. So what are our indicators showing? So the consumer message is still quite subdued. You can see our aggregate household spending intentions measure in the first chart there in the blue line. We have seen some signs of a stabilisation and even a little bit of a lift, but it's a pretty disappointing lift against that backdrop of the three RBA cash rate cuts and the personal income tax rebates that we've seen. The message on the home buying intentions indicator in the second chart, the red line, is a lot more clear cut. There's a very strong recovery underway in the housing market. So house prices are rising again strongly in Sydney and Melbourne. They've been fairly solid gains in house prices here in Hobart as well. And if we look at our household spending intentions, home buying index, it certainly suggests there's some more upside to house prices coming. So higher house prices are driving a big increase in household wealth, and there's now the possibility of positive wealth effects that will help the consumer. So what tends to happen is when people see the value of their house go up, they feel wealthier, they feel more inclined to spend more. As prices rise, we usually also see a lift in housing market turnover that also supports spending in things like furniture, large appliances, you know, new carpet and that sort of thing as well. So the recovery in the housing market should support the consumer. We also find that some categories of spending are more sensitive to what's happening in the housing market. Motor vehicles are the most sensitive category, and motor vehicle sales are still quite weak, but we have a motor vehicle component of our household spending intentions indicators, and that motor vehicle component is now looking to be recovering. So it does look like that turnaround in the housing market is helping. Our HSIs do strike a note of warning though. We've got a travel indicator and we've also got an education indicator. And these indicators have turned down just recently. So they are an early warning sign about some of the negatives from the bushfires and the viruses and how they're flowing into the economy. So what can policymakers do to help? So economists typically resort to the three Ps, so productivity, population growth, and participation. So two of the three Ps are certainly making a pretty solid contribution. Population growth is very strong. We've also seen quite a strong increase in labour market participation over the couple of years. And labour market participation is now, you know, very close to record highs, higher than when we saw it during the peak of the mining boom. Our weak spot, though, is productivity. And that's really the key to boosting potential economic growth. It's also the key to boosting living standards, lifting real wages growth, and supporting the consumer. So we know what we need, but how do we get it? So infrastructure, that's the economist's favourite answer. There is still plenty to do, and aside from the current transport focus, we need it in renewables, climate change, and in human capital as well. There are many big projects happening at the moment, particularly in the transport space, and there's now some talk of capacity constraints for building large projects being met. We think it's worth thinking small instead. So the Australian Local Government Association shows that $30 billion of infrastructure assets are in poor condition. Many of these are in regional areas, so this type of spending is definitely worth consideration. There is a lot of debate right now about potentially the use of unconventional monetary policy. We think a better option is to use the strength of the public sector balance sheet to deliver conventional policy, fiscal policy stimulus. So if a lack of income is the issue for households, then we think further tax cuts could help boost disposable income. The government's focus has been on producing a budget surplus, so shifting that fiscal direction is difficult. We think another option is to think about the spending taxation mix and how that could be shifted around while still leaving the budget bottom line fairly similar. So Australia is overweight taxes on personal income and companies and underweight taxes on consumer type taxes, the GST for example. This is compared to other OECD countries. So some of these taxes impose larger costs than others, and research generally shows that company tax and also things like stamp duties pose the largest costs on living standards. So we definitely think there's a good case for rethinking the tax mix and perhaps reshuffling it. If we want the government to use its balance sheet, then it's also reasonable to call on businesses to use their equally good balance sheets as well. So business balance sheets are in good shape. The right-hand side shows you debt servicing costs and gearing ratios are low. We know that businesses are reacting to this, to the uncertain environment, by limiting their capital expenditure. That's understandable. But we think we really do need to see a recovery in risk appetite in order to lift productivity and keep our economy growing. If uncertainty is a problem, then some certainty and greater clarity around the policy direction would help. And you can see from the first chart there, policy uncertainty is very high here in Australia. So it seems clear we need some clarity and certainty around energy policy. Also around climate policy, we think those two issues need to be addressed and that could help. And one thing I'm certain of is that I've probably now used up my allocated time, so I'll stop there and let you enjoy your lunch. Thank you.